Good afternoon. We'll go ahead and start the House Revenue Committee. New week, new subject. Today is the 7th day of March. It's now 1 o'clock. And we will begin today by holding a public hearing on House Bill 2629. Elizabeth?
Chairman Butler and committee members, with House Bill 2629, this is dealing with the estate tax. And it's a pretty simple bill in the sense of what it's doing. It's just increasing that gross estate value filing threshold for Oregon estate tax purposes to $1.5 million. This begins in 2007, and then up to $2 million for tax year 2008 and beyond. Now, basically, from last session, we had House Bill 3072, and I know we've already had orientation on estate taxes, but just to be clear on what are the filing thresholds under current law, we're connected with the federal law under the Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997. And basically, Oregon is already disconnected from the federal estate tax provisions in the 2001 Economic Growth and Tax Relief Act. Now, Oregon's gross estate filing threshold for Oregon estate tax purposes is different from the federal, and it is it will continue to be different. And with this bill, basically, what we have under current law is we go up to $1 million as far as the maximum amount of that gross estate filing threshold in Oregon. This bill would bring it up to $2 million for tax years 2008 and beyond. Now, for federal estate tax purposes, the federal gross estate tax filing threshold is currently at $1.5 million for tax years 2004 and 5, and we don't hit our $1 million until tax year 2006 here in Oregon. So we're already a disconnect. And then at the federal level, it goes up to $2 million for tax years 2006 and 08, and then up to $3.5 million in tax year 2009. So really, this is beginning to conform Oregon with the federal estate tax gross filing threshold, but we don't hit and have a parity with the federal gross estate tax filing threshold until 2008, just for that 1 year. And then in 09, at the federal level, it goes up to $3.5 million. But here in Oregon, we would still stay at the $2 million level.
Elizabeth?
And then the revenue impact you have there for you. And so everybody's clear, too. This is a preliminary revenue impact because it's based on the estate tax returns downloaded about August of last year. So Department of Revenue has just given me some new data, and I just haven't had a chance to go through it yet. But basically, it's based on the estate tax returns in tax year 2003, that they're just preliminary. And then I don't have any tax year 2004 returns. So basically, I'll be able to get all that kind of stuff the next time we hear this bill. But from the estimates, and this is what we had during orientation, again, this showed you the 2003 estate tax return by gross value. I've given you this page out of our tax report to our public finance basic facts. This is page F4. And if you look at the 2003 estate tax returns, you see that roughly, as far as the amount of Oregon tax, it's between $1 million and $1.5 million. It's only about 11% of all of that tax that is collected in 2003, given this preliminary data of like $55 million. And then when you go from $1.5 million up to $2 million, you see you get an additional about 6% more tax that would be excluded from the roll under this particular bill. So basically, you're up to about 17% of the tax in a given year, given 2003 returns, is how much would go off the roll from this particular provision. So that's what you're seeing here then in your revenue estimates. And again, it begins in tax year 2007. So in fiscal year 2007-08, you've got a loss of roughly $7 million. Then in 08, then you're going to be adding and going up to $2 million. Then in that point, you added another $4 million there in lost revenue. So now you're up to about $11 million a year in the outer years in 2008-09 fiscal year, and then 2009-11 biennium is roughly about $11 million a year also. And these are based on the March 2005 OEA revenue forecast of estate taxes, and then looking at this share that is basically these smaller estates.
Elizabeth, in this process, has there been any discussion of operating costs over to Department of Revenue?
Chairman Butler, no, I haven't heard of any, but you can sure have Deborah okay. speak to that.
I think the issue that we were faced with before was that while we were at some kind of a reconnect or a credit equivalency, that we were at a little over one person staff, down from a total of five or six, seven people, I think, and that we are going to have to restaff up now that we're not connected.
Well, Chairman Butler, you know, we're already disconnected. So, I mean, I don't think this bill is going to be making it any easier except for 1 year. I mean, we only connect for 1 year, and that's in tax year 2008.
Okay.
So, you know, Department of Revenue, I think, has already kind of dealt with the issue of the disconnect from last session's bill.
Okay. And relative to estate flight, we'd also had... I think a group in talking to us mm-hmm. about the potential of a state flight mm-hmm. out of the state of Oregon. Do we know anything with regard to that? Do you recall that testimony?
Chairman Butler, I don't remember, but again, Deborah could probably speak to that better as okay. far as how the department can handle that.
Excellent. Okay. JL, can we have you come forward, please? You signed up to testify on behalf of this particular legislation. Joe, please come up. Joe Swinehart, NFIB for JL Wilson and Association of Oregon Industries.
Thank you, Chair Butler and members of the committee. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing National Federation of Independent Business. I have 12,000 small business members here in the state of Oregon. Estate taxes have always been near and dear to our heart for one reason, and that is for the sake of family businesses where the owner of the business passes on and leaves a business to a family member. We've never felt it fair that we would encourage a policy that would take away from a lifetime of work or force a liquidation of a business or force a diversion of assets into things like attorney bills, insurance policies, those types of things to cover estate tax bills. We consider it an unfruitful diversion of assets from a small business, particularly a small business family. And that's what the estate tax forces family businesses and owners to do. Now, this bill is very part and parcel with the NFIB small business priorities, but it's also a very personal issue for me because of my grandfather. Now, my grandfather, in this bill I introduced for him, and his name was Louis Schultz, and he's my mom's father. And, you know, he is World War II generation, a B-25 pilot with the Jolly Rogers in the South Pacific. He went to Stanford Law School and decided to settle down at Grants Pass and raise a business and a family. And over the course of 50 years, he had a law practice. He was on the city council, on the school board. He accumulated a lifetime of savings, including a law practice, a home, and he owned a dental office, and he passed away last year. That lifetime of work ended up with an asset base of about $1.35 million. And as you know, Oregon's exemption level at that time was $850,000, while the federal exemption was $1.5 million. And as somebody now who is in care of that estate, myself and my mother and two others are taking care of portions of the estate, I can tell you that we are prepared to write a check to Department of Oregon Revenue for the amount of about $70,000. And there was two things that he wanted me to do. He said, JL, you need to pass an estate tax bill. And he said, Mom, which is my mom, you need to sell the property on your own because I don't want any of the money going to state government and I don't want it going to a realtor. I want this money going to my three children, one of which is my mother, one of which is my uncle who is in Nevada, and the other which is my aunt Jana, who is riddled with multiple sclerosis. So this is a story that plays itself out thousands of times, and it's a personal example of why we're supportive of trying to make the income threshold consistent statewide and federally. Now, I learned from Liz that obviously that's only going to do it for 1 year, and I'd like to make our bill so that it is consistent for more than just 1 year. But when you have a situation where you are not taxed federally, but you are taxed at the state level, I just would suggest to you that it's not business-friendly. And that is something that you would want to encourage, a lifetime of saving and passing that asset base on to heirs. And so that's the spirit in which we bring forward House Bill 2629 for the purposes of folks who accumulate a lifetime of savings, who have a family business, who want to pass it on and do not want a diversion of assets that is not fruitful or conducive to business growth or to passing that on to family heirs. And so that is why we introduced House Bill 2629. I'm fully aware of the revenue realities, and so we are not asking to eliminate the tax or to increase the exemption up to $5 or $10 million. I am simply asking to make the exemption level consistent with the federal exemption level. It is a limited request, but that I feel is the least we can do. Thank you, Chair Butler, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Why don't we go ahead with Joe Schweinhart, and then we'll come back. Joe, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Schweinhart from Associated Oregon Industries. I'm not here to make a long statement, just that I do support, and AOI supports this bill. We think the inheritance tax is unfair for the reasons, obviously, you've heard this morning, and we would support you supporting this bill and making the changes that are needed to make it fair for Oregon families. And there are many family businesses in Oregon that will need your help on this.
Joe, I think the AOI had some information about the potential amongst some of your members that we're considering or it has come up for consideration for a state flight from the state of Oregon. Maybe between you and JL we can invite testimony back. We're going to pick this back up on Wednesday, this issue. And so I'm interested in hearing that testimony. I think it was the CPAs also that mentioned it amongst their clientele and their basis, either the Oregon Society of CPAs or the attorneys, state bar, that have an issue with regard to the fact that it's very, very easy to move away from Oregon into one of the other adjoining states that have no such tax. I mean, Washington has a whole different issue now, but I understood that there were properties, folks that own property in other states other than some intangibles in Oregon, if they just claim residency in Southern California or Nevada or other states, then they were able to move their estates away. So,
thank you, Chair Butler and members of the committee. You know, NFIB has just undertaken a quarterly survey of Oregon businesses on a whole host of economic issues that make up what we consider to be the business environment in the state, and we compare them state to state. You know, NFIB, we represent a lot of good, decent people who settle down with family businesses, and I can tell you that most of them would probably stay in Oregon and stick it out regardless of the consequences. And these, you know, keep in mind this is a statewide survey, but most small business owners choose to stay in Oregon because, quite simply, their roots are here. And that is a fact that we got out of the survey itself, and the numbers were startling, that they would absorb any consequence by virtue of the fact that they were here, and by golly, this is where they were going to stay because this is where their family was and this is where their roots were.
And Mr. Chairman, I also might add that you have to understand that this is an accumulation of wealth. We're not necessarily talking about people that have a lot of money, but over time they've accumulated this wealth, and now this is their retirement and this is their life for the rest of their life. And they do want to stay in Oregon because they're not in a position to just jump up and take off.
Thank you very much, Joe. Representative Galizio.
Yeah, this is for Mr. Wilson. And have we ever met?
No.
No, we haven't met. Okay. My father owned a small business, actually not in this state, but so I'm very aware of the costs and the risks that small business owners have to take on a lot of, you know, this is a small business state, so I support small business. But having said that, I just wanted to ask you, what would you estimate the value of, you know, you said your grandfather was a dentist, is that correct?
Thank you, Chair Butler, Representative Galizia, he was an attorney.
He was an attorney, but then he also owned,
He owned the building where his practice was in. He owned his home, and he owned a little building that also housed a dentist office.
Okay. So what would you estimate the worth of the fact that we have a legal system that exists, and part of which is structured by the public sector and is paid by taxes, or the fact that we have an education system that primarily supports the bulk of the people who maybe worked for your grandfather, or maybe even supported or was part and parcel of your, maybe your grandfather was involved in public education at some point, or how much the fact that we have patents or some kind of regulatory system that exists so that the laws that perhaps your grandfather helped enforce were in existence. How much would you say that's worth?
Thank you, Chair Butler and Representative Galizio. That's a good question, and I understand that line of argument. And there's quite simply no way I could quantify that with a dollar figure. But my counter argument would simply be that accumulation was built with after-tax dollars. The tax dollars that he paid for on his way to that accumulation, theoretically should pay for those types of things. You look at the flip side, who this money is going to. Two out of his three kids in some form will probably be spared public assistance because of that money. One who is immobile due to multiple sclerosis, and the other who is I don't want to say the word transient, but is mobile in another state. And so you look at the recipients of this money, and there's undoubtedly two people who in some form are going to be spared public assistance. So there's two sides to that story. I understand fully well what the point you're trying to convey, however.
Is that responsive, Lip?
No, thank you.
Representative Collins, recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Butler. The question I have is the revenue impact that we have in front of us has been presented by OEA. Have either of your organizations done your own research on the revenue impact?
Thank you, Chair Butler and Representative Comb. I take as an article of faith the revenue of impact presented that was presented today.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Further questions? Thank you very much. We also have Jody Weiser, who wishes to testify on House Bill 2629.
I first want to start with a state flight option. Actually, this is a state that people move to retire, not move out of, and the surrounding states have the estate tax as well.
That's true with the exception of California, Idaho, Nevada, Washington.
They don't have the estate tax?
They don't have an estate tax like this one. Washington's was just overturned. So.
Well, I didn't know that it was just overturned. When was it overturned?
Just go ahead and give us your testimony.
Okay, so I'm surprised to hear that.
Yeah.
And we need to check the facts on that because I'm understand differently.
Yeah.
We are a state that has positive inflow of retirees, so they're unlikely to move just before they die in all likelihood.
Do you know anything about the size of the estates of those folks that are flowing into the state of Oregon?
They're buying houses here that cost a lot of money.
Okay.
But no, we don't know that.
Okay.
Excuse
me, Jody. Let me just ask: does legislative fiscal have access to that information? We should. That's a very important statistic. If we can get that, new residents moving into the state of Oregon, some demography on those, as well as the purchase of homes, with the value of homes going up, if we can get a hold of that information. I think that would be important information.
Chair, we do have a current population survey that the state conducts. They asked that question where
you live
5 years ago.
Okay, good.
We'll see what we got.
And let's see what we can do about values of homes that those folks are purchasing as well. Okay, Jody, please.
It concerns me that we're tying to the federal law because there's a huge attempt at the federal level to void this tax entirely. And so we really need to look at a much bigger revenue impact. This is our third biggest tax collection. It's still only about 1.7% of our taxes, but our tax general fund, but it is money that comes in that could have a big effect, and the effect now is different than the effect in the future because of the anticipated, there's a bunch of wealth that's going to be passed from one generation to the next, and it's coming towards us. It's not here yet. So the impact gets bigger over time when you make this kind of change. We've also said that we're not going to have any new taxes, so it doesn't really make sense to have any new tax breaks. And finally, the most common argument against the estate tax is the small business argument. But this proposal doesn't really do anything that directly affects that. And in fact, art is as big a part of estates as small businesses are. It's really not a very big piece of what's passed. In fact, the example that was just given was of somebody who owns real estate primarily. I'm sure that's where the net worth is for his grandfather rather than in his law practice. It's probably in the house, the building that his law practice is in, and the dental building. And that's not really a family business. And so then I think finally you come down to the question of who won the birth lottery. Because if you actually go and pay megabucks and you get $1.5 million, you pay taxes on it. But if you happen to have been born to a family of wealth, then you've gotten all the assets of living in that family and having the advantages of that, and you also get whatever your parents left. Some of you know my story, but many of you don't. I actually inherited from a family business, a family farm. It was no longer a small family farm by the time my parents died. It started as a 40-acre farm. It ended as a 4,000-acre farm that my brothers were farming when my parents passed away. We paid the estate tax when my parents died. We paid the estate tax when my brother died 2 years later. So we had two generations in 2 years. Had nothing to do in either case with what happened to the farm because they had been planning for that and bought. Yes, they diverted revenue and bought life insurance so that it would cover that risk that they held, just as we buy car insurance to cover the risk that we hold. Really, buying life insurance is just a form of prepaying taxes. And in the case of my parents' farm, which was mostly appreciated property that had never been taxed, and this gentleman's grandfather's assets, which was mostly appreciated property that had probably never, that great gain in value had probably never been taxed because it had been owned for many years. Just like the gain in my house is like at this point about $500,000. It's never been taxed. If I pass that to my children without taxes, then they're getting, we're transferring property without taxes that people who earn a living wouldn't be able to. They don't get money without paying taxes. So I think that the estate tax is a very fair tax, and at this point we're paying only the richest 1 or 2% are paying the tax. So there's really a huge amount of assets that are passed, $1.5 million at the federal level, and I think it's $950,000 this year and $1 million next year at the state level, that children are getting tax-free. There's no capital gains tax paid on that or any tax paid on that first $1.5 million or $950,000 to $1 million. And that's really quite a very large gift that's being given. It's also true that if you take the estate tax away, which this bill I think would eventually lead us to, or could eventually lead us to, then you have the problem of trying to figure out what was the capital gains that needs to be paid on that property that's been owned for 50 years. Because it reverts to a capital gains tax at that point. And that is, one, more complicated, and, two, more painful for small businesses than the estate tax generally is.
Let me ask this of staff. Does I know that there are certain family business and property used within a family business exemptions, 2032A and those kinds of exemptions. Do those qualify in Oregon when we arrive at the $950,000 current level?
Chairman Butler, if those are exemptions that were in place in 97, you know, that's what we're connected to, is that 97 law, then yes.
So family business under 2032A or the other kinds of discounts for assets mm-hmm. held in a family business discounted for their, or farmlands discounted for their not for their highest and best use, but as their interest in growing crops, those can still be used as discounts then.
Yeah, okay. Chairman, but just so long as we aren't connected with those 2001 changes, so if there were any of those new ones or something right. that were added in 01, we haven't connected to
that. Yeah, I don't know of any other valuation changes. I mean, the other valuation changes for small business and property held in a small business for the family gains were tough enough to calculate and justify. Mm-hmm. But let's see, then the minority discounts and the those kinds of things would still apply to Oregon that were in effect with 497.
Mm-hmm.
Please continue, Jody.
It's good that you brought up those kinds of exemptions because they're a way in which small businesses very much already benefited in comparison to other kinds of wealth. If you own a bunch of forest land and it's owned by several different people, then you can discount it up to 60%. So you have $18 million worth of forest land. It gets valued at $9 million instead of at $18 million when you go to pay the estate tax, because you've got, the theory is that because there's so many different owners, then they would have a hard time agreeing on how to sell it, whether to sell it or not, and so that devalues the asset. And that's the kind of thing that small businesses can do, that somebody owns stocks and bonds, there's no discount at all. They're also the current use of the land kind of discount. Plus, in my family situation, when it was put out for an appraisal, the appraisal came back for the land was the majority of the farm. I'd say it was probably two-thirds of the value. It came back land valued at $2,200 an acre with a very good appraisal to support that. We would never have sold that land for less than $3,200 an acre, excuse me, as opposed to $2,200 an acre. So they had come up with an appraisal for the tax man that looked really good, and that's the kind of thing you can't do on stocks and bonds either. So small businesses have quite a few opportunities to advantage themselves with the estate tax as it stands. It used to be that in the 97 law, but the exemption levels have lapsed it, there was extra money if you owned a small business and somebody in the family stayed in that business for 10 years after the death. And I think if you really need to do something to concern yourself with small business, and I think it does make some sense, that's a really good way to do it. You can just say, well, our exemption level is $950,000. We will double that exemption level if it's for one small business in which a family member has been an owner, operator, or has been an operator and is materially involved both before the death and for 10 years after the death. That's in federal. You know, you can look at that kind of wording up in old federal statute and come up with it pretty easily.
Okay.
Thank you.
Questions of Ms. Weiser? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And we have Don Schillenberg, Oregon Farm Bureau, signed up here. And I will ask Elizabeth that you take a look at the other estate tax laws of adjacent states, particularly after the Washington Supreme Court overturned their death tax, because that creates a whole new magnet for these kinds of estates, particularly in the Portland area, where those people may own property across the river, too. So, Don, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. Support the concept of the bill, certainly. Listening to Mr. Wilson's testimony and the survey that they did, agriculture much the same way. The difference between most small business and agriculture is, if you've got a small business, generally you can pick it up and move it somewhere else. Pretty hard to pick up a farm and move it somewhere else.
We did find $400,000 more value. We got 4,000 acres and an extra $1,000 an acre on a Weiser family farm. I noticed that they ran out the door to call the IRS. So we will be getting back and maybe create a little more extra revenue here. Excuse me, Don, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so this is a very important issue for agriculture. You have a family farm and you have children who want to continue on in the farm, and you want that farm to continue. You don't move it someplace else and continue. Part of my job, so to speak, another hat that I wear, is I'm the chair of the Century Farm and Ranch program. That's sponsored by the Department of Ag, the Farm Bureau, and the Historical Society. And what that does is recognize farms who have been in the same family in continuous operation for 100 years or more. And we'll soon be celebrating some that have been in that position for 150 years. That makes a big difference to a community. It provides stability to a community. And so the relief under inheritance is very important for farmers and ranchers to keep those farms in production, keep them in the same family, and provide that stability in the community. You mentioned, I think the previous speaker and Mr. Chair yourself talked about discounts, I guess they're called. The land is assessed at farm use value, and it's valued that way under federal law. In order to be valued that way, it has to continue in production for another 10 years. So there is some incentive there to keep it in farming when you do take advantage of that valuation. Some of the things it doesn't take into consideration is some other government restrictions that come along, environmental restrictions, fish and wildlife restrictions, those kinds of things that you have to take into account that reduce your capability of production, and those kinds of things aren't calculated in that reduced value. So we would encourage the committee to support the bill. We'd like to see that moved higher. We'd like to see it mirror the federal law until the federal law is phased out. So with that, I would again ask for your support.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Schillenberg? Yes, Representative Berger is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don, how many century farms are there in Oregon, do you know?
A little over 1,000.
That's a pretty impressive number. I think that we all, I'm not speaking one way or another on this bill, but I think we all have this image of sort of this family farm as some sort of a cozy thing. Actually, my experience is it's just darn hard mucking work by a group of people who get very little reward. But if they stay in it, they must stay in it because they are making money, presumably, or they like the job. It's sort of like being a legislator. You either like it or get out. I'm curious how you define a family farm for the purposes that you're talking about here, and what percentage of our gross ag in Oregon is, and you don't have to answer this in the chair, but I'm telling you these are things that interest me. What percentage of our gross farm output, if you will, is under whatever your definition is of a family farm? Mm-hmm. And so if they were to be passed on, what's the value of an average farm? So I guess I'm looking at this from some sort of a informational databases as to actually what the impact would be on farms in Oregon, this legislation or other proposals with regard to estate taxes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, the family farm definition would be a farm that is not in a publicly held corporation. Many farms incorporate, but not for purposes of putting out for public investment. Oregon, there are less than 2% of Oregon farms that are not family farms. Just 98% plus are family farms in Oregon. The farm gate value in 2003, I believe it was, just came out recently. It's over $3.8 billion in Oregon. That is rising and for export purposes. Just read recently that while electronics exports dipped 40%, agriculture exports went up 20%. So agriculture is a key part of Oregon's economy. 80% of what we produce in this state is exported out of the state. Half of that internationally and half of it domestically.
Now, Representative Berger, one of your questions was how do you get a discount for a family farm? I think Jody kind of referred to that in part, and that is that you've got to have a member of the family guaranteed continue on to that farm and in that operation in production for the next 10 years.
Is that in federal statute?
That's in federal statute, and it's my understanding from visiting with staff that that continues because it was pre-97 that exemption then qualifies for Oregon, so that you can discount a family farm back to its farm use value. And there's a special farm use value that where you have to use some federal farmland, farm bank. What's it called? Federal Farm Bank. What is the name of it? FLB, Federal Land Bank. Federal Land Bank values for internal rates of return applied to the actual production on that farm, or there are a couple of iterations of that. So it's based upon production, and then based upon a family member, a qualified family member of the decedent, continuing on to guaranteeing that they will continue to operate that operation.
Mr. Chair, so what you're saying is that this farms who qualify under that would not have to lose their farm to an estate taxation piece, or lose the value, or sell off the farm if someone died, if they qualified under that federal program.
Probably what we could do is get some values of how much that discounts, but the bottom line is it doesn't remove the value of the farm out of the estate. It just means that the death tax that you pay on that farm will be based upon the reduced value of the farmland. And nor does it mean that you won't be able to go out and, or that you won't have to go out and borrow money to pay the federal and or state death tax at the time of the passing of the decedent, because it's not uncommon that if you've got a $3.5 million farm, and take into consideration a $3.5 million farm at current rates of return, these are about a $70,000 income per year. I mean, that's what you get for working it, and that's not considering any return on the value of it. That's just what you get when you go to work in the morning. So what happens is that if that farm then was moving from the decedent to the decedent's son, and or maybe a couple of sons and a daughter or son-in-law, at that particular point, qualified heirs who were going to continue to farm that, it might be that the value of that farmland, again, depending upon a whole bunch of valuations, it might be that that $3.5 million of the farmland would be then dropped back to $2 million. Okay? But then take into consideration that you got to have some operating capital to operate that farm. You got to have some machinery and equipment to operate that farm. Most all of that, the capital, as Jody indicated, the whatever cash there is left to operate that is going to be subject to no discount. It's all within the value of the farm itself, and or within the assets of the decedent themselves. And then so what happens is you're back up to, you know, estate after the discount, but you might be able to hold it together after paying, what's JL? JL, I think, used a figure of $60,000 to $80,000, and that's not uncommon. We're paying that on a death right now of a recently deceased member of our family, that in order to and most of their property, most of the value of their property was outside the state of Oregon, but we'll still end up paying a very significant Oregon value. So there are various discounts, but will that hold the farming together? Not necessarily. However, to get that discount, the family has to agree, and then they also pledge it to the, and I guess at this point they must pledge that farm not just to the Internal Revenue Service, they must pledge it also to the state of Oregon with that inheritance tax return. So both taxing entities then have some residual assignment back on the value of that farmland, which guarantees that the son-in-law stay on the farm. You got to have that family heir, and they can't get discouraged after 3 or 4 or 7 or 8 or 9 years. I mean, if they get discouraged, then we've got a whole different issue there.
You forgot one gender.
The daughter that wanted to stay on the farm.
Thank you.
Usually the daughter, you know, is supported by a really, really tolerant husband at that particular point, usually, but not necessarily representing. Not necessarily. You're absolutely right.
One other thing, Mr. Chair. I would like to hear how many farms were sold in Oregon over the last couple of years to pay estate taxes. Do you have that?
That's a good question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ruger, I do not have that figure. I don't know where you get that figure. perhaps the revenue office.
Chairman Butler, Representative Berger, yeah, we did kind of try to investigate that as far as, you know, the number of farms and stuff, and unfortunately it's not data that's readily available just from the return data that research has at Department of Revenue. So, but it is something they could do some searching and do some linkage in. But I think it's a little bit of a going through files kind of a thing to identify all the different farms. So it is a little bit of work for them. But I'm not saying if it's a real interest of the committee, we can look into that.
I think that there are other, in addition to the farms, there are other small family business, whether it's the print shop or maybe even the law firm, if the Wilson family had a lawyer in the family. Of course, to get a lawyer, you have to be dropped on your head a lot of times anyway. So, but in this case, the family took really good care of their posterity and didn't have more lawyers, perhaps.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, I would add that for that one, it's devastating.
Oh.
No matter how many there are.
Don't worry, I'm not arguing that.
It's a big problem. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You bet. Other questions for Mr. Schoenberg? Thank you very much.
But I do have a clarifying statement. I need to explain why I asked the previous question.
Yes, please.
When I see the letters OEA, I didn't know that was Office of Economic Analysis. I thought it was Oregon Education. Because I live in a different world, so I apologize.
Oh, no. Okay.
OEA.
And Representative Comp, I don't mean to, you know, confuse you by putting that in there. You know, I do these revenue impacts. I mean, so don't feel like this is not what I have done, but all I was trying to refer you to is just let everyone know that those forecasts that you get each quarter are used by our office to be able to baseline then these different estimates that we make.
Well, I thought so, and that's what I thought. OEA, what are they doing a forecast for?
And Mr. Chairman, if I might respond to Representative Comp and the daughter, there's some very smart men who marry these farmers' daughters.
That's right.
I count myself among them, having married a Kansas wheat farmer's daughter. While we're here, that did benefit us greatly.
Many of us learned about economics on that farm.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Don. Colleagues, we've come up with a lot of questions. I'll work with we will next year this bill on Wednesday. I'll work with the Legislative Revenue Office to continue to examine some of the questions that we've come up with here and see if we can't get some answers relative to the adjoining states, the state potential for a state flight, and some of those kinds of questions as well. Representative Hass, recognized?
Thank you. I do want to point out, though, that we spent a lot of time on this issue last session. Representative Berger will verify, one of the things we did was we cleaned up a basically unworkable system that was on the books. But we also set those tables that exist today, and those tables were passed by a fairly overwhelming majority in both chambers, and they've only been in effect one tax year. And so I just want to lay that out.
Thank you very much, Representative, and we don't mean to disparage the good work which was done last session. There are still those who have brought forward these bills indicating that maybe it would be a good idea for us to continue to examine the possibility, particularly as we have differing estate laws and continued wide variety of estate laws in those all virtually every state which surrounds the state of Oregon now appears to have a more favorable method of calculating these same values. With that, colleagues, I'll commit to the committee that we'll continue to work on that. We'll close the public hearing on 26-29 and open a work session for the introduction of bills from the committee. Colleagues, today is the last day for bill introduction from the committee members, and we have a series of four legislative concepts, 2104, 2952, 2953, 3124. We'll ask Paul, Legislative Fiscal Officer, Revenue Officer, to go through those with us. Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to remind the committee that this is the last day for bill introduction for without special direction from the Speaker's office. So you've got four. The first one, 3124, is directly related to your discussion today. It eliminates the inheritance tax completely starting with January 106. LC 2104 creates a Director of Legislative Audit Office appointed by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, and then it goes on and specifies duties for that, and repeals the statutory authority of the Secretary of State to conduct the performance and program audits. So it's an institutional change. LC 2952 and 2953 are both related to our current research and development tax credit. 2952 increases the maximum amount allowable by an individual company, and 2953 allows corporations to sell tax credits for research and development purposes, so it creates a secondary market for those tax credits.
And 3124, did you already go through that?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, that 3124 is a very much related to your discussion today, but what this does is repeal the state's inheritance tax beginning January 1, 2006.
Okay. Colleagues, these are four legislative concepts that have been approved for introduction by various folks and have requested that they be introduced through the committee today. Are there is there any discussion which need to be had? The intention is to move forward to introduce these. I would entertain a motion from Representative Olson that legislative concepts 2104, 2952, 2953, 3124 be introduced to the House of Representatives as House Revenue Committee introduced bills. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. And for the record, Representatives Berger and Riley were both excused from that vote. They are testifying in other committees. Colleagues, any further business for the good of the order today? Being none, we will stand adjourned until tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Yep, the office.
5:30.